Welcome to the Freedom Report, broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Who's Austin Peterson?
Liberty champion Austin Peterson, this Justin Bieber lookalike, and a powerful advocate for liberty.
Who's Austin Peterson? I'm an American. I love life, liberty, and family, but I'm not a conservative. I'm a hardcore libertarian. What am I doing here? I'm trying to restore the republic. The Libertarian Republic is a website aimed at furthering the ideas of economic freedom and personal liberty. I don't really care about parties. All I care about are ideas. And the one idea I care the most about? Freedom! That's right, pure freedom on the Freedom Report podcast.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report. My special guest today is a man who gained fame for his claims about mishandled intelligence before the 9/11 attacks, and whose book, Operation Darkheart, was censored by the Obama administration. He's Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer, an expert in foreign policy and recipient of the Bronze Star for his combat tours in Afghanistan. Colonel, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Austin. Good to be on.
Yeah, please tell me a little bit about Obama's strategy. It seems to be that we're going to be arming these moderate jihadists to fight against our enemies. Is that the right strategy, in your opinion?
Well, first off, it's not a strategy. Secondly, it is the wrong element of a strategy if it was a strategy, and it's not. Let me break it down for you in two pieces. First, the president continues to ignore the fact that it's not about ISIS. It's about radical Islam. It's about the whole construct, which continues to build and sustain groups like ISIS. Before ISIS was Al-Qaeda, and so our Sharia, the Taliban. There's a number of groups which their real coin of the realm is extremism, period. We continue to fail to understand we need to get to the root of that. We have engaged, Austin, we've talked about this before, over the past 12 years, we have won every tactical engagement with this adversary. We, you know, if you fight them one-on-one, we win. That's not the issue. This is a war of ideology and of the mind as much as weapons. Sun Tzu once said, tactics before a strategy is the noise before defeat. We've had lots of tactics. This issue of ISIS is another tactic. It's not a strategy. So that's first thing. Second thing, you are completely correct in your assessment of the insanity of arming radical Islamic militia to take on other Islamic radical militia. Are you kidding me?
Right.
There's nothing good in that. And all that will come from it is what we've experienced in Afghanistan. As of late, the Haqqani network we helped create and train during the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan during the 80s, they were our friends as long as we were paying the bill and training them. Then the moment that things changed, they're on the other side. Haqqani network has been one of the most effective fighting forces against us in Afghanistan. So the bottom line is this: there's no good there regarding long-term policy implications of this action. Secondly, even if you take it on the face of it, you accept the fact they're going to look for these quote-unquote moderate Islamic militia. I'd like to know where they're going to look. I mean, are they going to go to, Sotheby's? Or are they going to go to the Kmart? I mean, where are they going with these guys? Syria? Are you kidding me?
That's my next question. What exactly is the process that they use to vet these rebels?
Well, I hope it's better than the one they used in Libya right before the Benghazi attack, because that was what was going on there. We had enlisted a number of local militia, Austin, to protect us and to do our bidding. The vetting there was horrible, obviously, because the militia we hired to both protect the compounds and essentially serve as our proxies on the ground didn't work. Everywhere in Libya today, every city has the flag of Al-Qaeda in some form flying over it. So that really turned out good. So now we're talking about doing the same thing. We're arming these moderate militia. They're going to send them to Saudi Arabia. Gee, that's the home of the whole concept of Wahhabism, which is the current force behind the Islamic faith being radicalized. That's a great idea. So it's totally insane the way they're laying this out. This is like you're taking bad guys to throw against other bad guys, and you're going to send them to a country who really – was the home for all of the radicalization to begin with, so you can train them. Something wrong with this picture? And this is where, even if you accept it on the face that you're going to take 5,000 folks, Austin, the current official number of ISIS fighters is 31,000. And oh, by the way, they are recruiting faster in England. They're recruiting more people are joining ISIS than the British military. Mm. So think about this. Mm-hmm. By the time you get there a year from now is when they're saying you're going to have these 5,000 people vetted and trained. They're going to be at 60,000 or more. So the whole thing, there's not an element of this so-called strategy that actually is realistic, potentially successful, or even long-term something we want to do regarding strategy, because it's not a strategy.
Now, putting aside the issue of just staying the hell out of it totally, which it seems is not even an option anymore, we're always talking about arming these bad guys, and there's like some guys that are bad or some guys that are really bad. But what about the Kurds? You know, the Kurds, those seem to be our allies in the region. Why aren't we focusing on that?
Because of politics again. President Obama has this reluctance to actually deal with people who are reasonable spirits, if you will. There's three groups of people we should be dealing with the Kurds. Mm-hmm. There's a group called the Assyrians, who have basically lived on the border between Syria and Iraq for thousands of years. The Yazidi, who were recently just pulverized by ISIS. And then the Iraqi Christians. Mm-hmm. Three groups which should be working hand in glove with the Kurds to basically defend their homeland. This is the key. They want to go home. I've met with these folks on Capitol Hill, Austin, over the last 2 weeks. Yazidi, Christians, the Assyrians were all offered refugee status. They said, no, we don't want to be refugees. Mm-hmm. We want you, America, to arm us and let us go home. Mm-hmm. Imagine that. Mm-hmm. So this is where the president has really reasonable alternatives. This is one of them. This is one of the ones that's, to me, a no-brainer. These people are not radicalized. The only reason they want to take up arms is to defend their home, mm-hmm. a home that they lived on for thousands of years. Mm-hmm. So that is nothing but an upside for everybody. But yet the president doesn't want to consider it. Instead, he wants to arm these Islamic militia. Mm-hmm. Does not make sense. Then what we ought to do also to solidify our effort on the ground. He's talking about this coalition of the willing. Knock it off. It's time we get serious about establishing a real coalition that can sustain itself and do what NATO did for Europe. As a matter of fact, we're calling it an Arab NATO. Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, all have militaries that have been trained by us. Some of the officers in those militaries actually went to our Army War College, Air War College, Navy War College. Mm-hmm. So for goodness sake, why don't we allow the investment we've made over the last 50 years to finally pay off? We've already built these people's armies. We have invested heavily in them. Why do you not want to use them now? And that's the other thing. Our two-part tactical assessment is to use the Yazidi, the Kurds, the Free Assyrians, the Iraqi Christians in a combination with these real militaries that we've trained. Put them together in a format to be our boots on the ground. Mm-hmm. So this is one of those things that I would think libertarians and others on the conservative side would embrace. We're talking about doing it on the cheap, but doing it in a way that's very effective, using the resources which are already there. And this is why I'm so appalled, Austin, that Congress approved this $500 million for this totally insane effort, which frankly is not going to go anywhere. It's not going to stop ISIS. And it simply is going to be another thing that President Obama does to put forth the appearance of progress while in the end causing more damage as we execute the concept.
I'm looking for a silver lining in this cloud. I'm not a big fan of the enemy of my enemy is my friend here. But do you see any potential for us to have improved relations with Iran by the end of this conflict?
You know, the Iranians are a noodle to which we have not been able to crack. And this is where I take a duality view of it. Let me explain. We should have, back in 2009, really thrown in for what I would call the Persian Spring. Mm-hmm. The Persian people, the Iranians, want to be free. The youth, people our age and younger, Austin, they want to have a Western lifestyle. So we should have encouraged that. Instead, President Obama was silent. He almost supported the mullahs against the people, which is, to me, totally insane.
Really?
We had a real opportunity. And then even if we're not successful in bringing forth democracy there, we've caused so much havoc, they can't focus on creating the nuclear program. So I think there was a real win for us there. We totally blew off. So now we have this new opportunity. The Iranians have to be looked at as a resource we must deal with. They have something called Hezbollah, which is their own terrorist organization. These people aren't good, and they're also supporting Bashar al-Assad, another bad guy. With that said, I think they are much more predictable and, frankly, much more essentially negotiable. You can negotiate with them by the fact that they have a home, they have a country, they have certain objectives. So this is where I think we have to clarify our thinking of what the Iranians are going to do and what's going to become of the whole region. the left has been very naive about dealing with the whole issue of the nuclear programs in Iran. And this is why. As much as you and I could agree that they're rational actors, it's not so much about them being rational with a nuclear weapon, about what their neighbors are going to do. The moment the Iranians have a deliverable weapon, a nuclear weapon, you're going to see the Saudi Arabians take a delivery of a Pakistani-made nuclear bomb. You're going to see the Egyptians take a delivery of a Pakistani-made nuclear bomb, and Turkey. So you're going to see the Sunni-Shia arm each other. So just remember, the Iranians are essentially the Shia element. The Egyptians, Saudis are all Sunni. So you're going to see an Arab bomb, but you're going to see a split Arab world using that bomb. So it's completely insane. We could see this nuclear proliferation thing get way out of hand quickly. And my worry is not so much that the adult leaders in these countries have the weapons. I'm worried about those adult leaders being able to sell those weapons to people who may be irrational enough to use them against us or other allies. So this is where we have to take this much more seriously. Austin, this is a chess game. We can't, one size does not fit all. And we have to have serious people thinking serious thoughts, trying to figure out the best way forward for all of this. And frankly, the current president and his staff are not up to the task.
All right, I have two more questions for you. The first one strategic, the last one political, related to what you just said. I guess this one is just, you know, what I think most Americans want to know. Is there any real potential threat from the Islamic State against the homeland of the United States?
Yeah, the answer is yes. And there's two reasons. And I would stipulate, first off, that we've seen radical Islam raise its ugly head both in England recently, where where radical Islamists took a British soldier during broad daylight and decapitated him. I mean, that's horrific. And then the Australians acted earlier today, because it's tomorrow there. They used 800 of their armed police and anti-terrorism forces to go take down a cell of ISIS right in Australia.
Unbelievable.
And they had two cities that they were actually going to capture, just random Australian citizens, put the black flag of ISIS on them and behead them on video. So, and this was a combination of good police work and a bunch of bullies who were wanting to brag about this. So that's my concern.
Is that could happen here?
It could happen here by the fact that people are self-radicalizing. You've seen people arrested because they want to go join ISIS. Mm-hmm. Austin, some are going to stay here and want to support ISIS.
Right.
And then those who do go and come back obviously do offer a real threat. So it's just a matter of time before I think they get somebody here. And I think my latest book, The Last Lines, about the Southwest border, no matter how you feel about border security, but regarding the open borders or not open borders, I'm one who says you've got to screen everybody no matter what, because I'm telling you right now, if the drug cartels can break the code to get people in and out of here, which they do, the terrorists are right behind them.
Yeah, I'm very much on the open border side of things, being a radical libertarian, but I do think, you know, that we should at least have a security check and a disease check at the very least.
Absolutely.
For people entering the country. So here's the last question. Colonel, I'm scared because of the tough president that we have right now, because it seems as if he's acting recklessly. And I wonder if you think politically that the reason why he is acting and acting so hastily is because of his bottomed out approval ratings.
You know, I don't think so. I think he does look at the approval ratings, but I can't tell you who. Mm-hmm. But I've been in contact with a senior member of the current Pentagon, and through our contact, he's indicated to me that this behind the scenes fight of the military and military intelligence folks trying to tell the president what's really going on is falling on deaf ears. So I don't believe it's a narrative issue. I believe that for whatever bizarre reason, the president does not want to take the best advice of his military leaders and intelligence leaders and act on it. And again, this goes back, Austin, years. This goes back several years. Mm-hmm. And I think we're just seeing the culmination of a complete neglect or interest in actually thinking deeply about, you know, thinking of this as a chess game rather than a checker game, because I think so much of what the president's doing right now is truly causing damage to our allies and ourselves.
Well, that's Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer. Colonel, thank you very much for your time.
Anytime. Thanks, Austin.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to this Freedom Report podcast with Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer. If you enjoyed the show, please do us a favor and subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also subscribe to us on Stitcher if you have an Android. Simply download the simple app, Stitcher, and find us there. If you really enjoyed it, please do me a favor, go to iTunes and leave me 5 stars and a good written review. That will help me to expand this podcast. And as always, thank you for listening to your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at thelibertarianrepublic.com.